Then as my oldest started getting aware of technology, I realized what a lonely place it is and how much opportunity there is to misstep and to be ostracized or bullied or left out. And I'd wanted to create something where people were invited.
This is A New Angle, and I'm your host, Justin Angle, marketing professor at the University of Montana. This podcast is my chance to speak with cool people doing awesome things in and around the great state of Montana. We are proudly underwritten by First Security Bank and Blackfoot. Hey folks, welcome back and thanks for tuning in. Today we bring you one of Missoula's finest, Molly Bradford. Molly seems to be everywhere. She is involved and engaged in so many aspects of our community. Her software venture, Gatherboard, powers MissoulaEvents.net and similar community calendars for a surprisingly wide variety of clients. Events are such an integral part of how communities connect, and it's nice to think about in-person events right now. Molly and I dig into the dynamics of her business and her unique view of how technology can be used to foster human connection. Molly's work helps drive the culture of this community and many others, and I'm excited for you to learn more about her right now. Oh, and be sure to listen all the way to the end for some key insights on bathroom advertising. Molly's an expert on that as well. Okay, so we're here today with Molly Bradford. Molly, thanks for finally coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And when I say finally, I take complete responsibility for that. I've dragged my heels in trying to get this to happen, so it's happened. I actually canceled on you once, too, so.
I may have canceled on you. I almost canceled on you today.
Yeah, you were coming in hot, in your words, from Sealy Lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a place you want to run out of wiper fluid. Or traveling from Sealy Lake to Missoula is not a place or time you want to run out of wiper fluid.
Not when there's snow melt on the road.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
No. Yeah, I don't normally go to Sealy Lake, but I snuck in a meeting.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good.
Well, where do we start? I could list, it would probably be easier to list the organizations in this town that you're not involved with. That would take less time.
I don't know about that.
You're a woman about town. I see you everywhere. What do you not do? What's on your list that you don't do that you want to start doing?
Oh, goodness. There are a lot of things that I don't do. And I see you around town, so you're a man about town. So
I suppose.
So tap your own hat on that one. Well, I was just finishing a book on Audible recently about making money and wealth and the mindset behind all of that. And as a former triathlete and marathon runner, I realized that if I applied the same discipline that I did to races, to wealth or my current job or parenting, really anything, I'd probably have amazing outcomes. Mm. Not to say that I don't have good outcomes, because I feel pretty great about my track record, but I realize that it's normal in some places to have a coach and a plan and discipline, and it tends to be something I think more of as a physical pursuit,
yeah,
opposed to more of like a mental,
right,
or a vocational pursuit. Mm-hmm. And I think that people are afraid of talking about money sometimes, and women in general are trying to figure out, right, equal pay and C-suite,
yeah,
and
yeah,
CEO and funding and all these things. So I'm really kind of obsessed with it right now. And I don't want it to be a dirty word or a dirty concept. And my motivation is very altruistic as well.
Mm-hmm.
I already am involved in a lot of organizations, and I would love to have the generosity at the level that I have with time. I'd like to have that level with money.
Yeah, and that takes a transparency that doesn't currently exist. I mean, one of the things I've learned just observing the way organizations work, it almost seems as if the organization wants that opacity, right? It wants to create this taboo about its employees talking about how much they're compensated and whatnot. And employees sort of feel that. And I think it doesn't serve anyone.
No.
I mean, if we're colleagues and I know how much you get paid, that helps me negotiate.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's a lot of fear that it will make people feel angry or there'll be animosity.
Yeah.
And there would certainly be a icky period,
mm-hmm,
because it's a change.
Yep.
And that can be real awkward. I remember when I had a new sales manager at the Missoula Independent, the former Alt Weekly. I'm going to just wipe my tears for a minute on that one. I really grew up there. I was an ad rep there for 8 years. And I remember this new manager came in, and every week at our sales meeting, he showed everyone's numbers, how they did the previous week, and your next 4 weeks, and then your quarters were laid out. And at first, I just wanted to barf in my mouth a little bit, like, oh my God, everyone can see that I didn't make my numbers. But then I was like, well, but I can see everyone, and I'm really focused on my number. And, you know, what happened was I became the highest grossing rep that they had when I was there. Like, it turned out to be something really great for me.
Those numbers were motivating?
Yeah, it turned out to be motivating because it was so transparent. Yeah. And that was the first time money was really talked. It wasn't salaries like you and I were just saying, but it was money. Because I was on commission, straight commission, so it was really salary.
Yeah.
Really, basically.
I mean, you could derive from those sales numbers what was going on. Everybody was making.
But then it became a thing like, oh, I'm so close. I can do that. I can make those five extra cold calls. I can smile and dial that. I can upsell that person. I can be unapologetic about my rates. I'm actually this good. I deserve these rates. Like, I started to have this totally different relationship with myself, with money, about sales, like all sorts of things. And so that was really cool.
I'm starting to think as you lay that out there, like you talked about the discipline that you brought to your triathlon and marathon training. And there's a similar dynamic in that. Very transparent. I mean, everybody knows how you did in a race. Either they're at the race or they see the results. You're watching your splits all the time in the race and training and all that. Does that sort of transparency of the metrics maybe contribute to the to that focus?
I think it does. And I think then, you know, you see all these people talking about getting coaches or being in mastermind groups, and whether they're formalized or ad hoc. There's sometimes that I'm like, ugh, I don't want one more thing to do or pay for. But then when I go back to the whole discipline of an athlete, they are totally with a coach and they are totally with a trainer and they probably have multiple coaches and they're getting, you know, massage and they're doing mental training and they have nutrition. I mean, like, nutrition was crazy when I had an 18-month-old and did a half Ironman. That the discipline of a full-time job, being a mom, that's crazy. And I was just thinking about that, like, wow, I did some crazy stuff. Like, oh, I got this. I just need the same discipline.
Mm-hmm. So what are you changing in your professional life?
Well, so I think I'm going to, well, because I'm changing my location for a little while, I'm actually anticipating that I'm going to have more white space that in Missoula when I'm involved in all these different organizations, whether it's, you know, having interns or mentoring or being mentored or volunteering or with at my kid's school, whatever, with that white space, I'm going to buckle down on a bunch of discipline as it relates to the wealth of or the gross profits of my company and myself.
So when people listen to this, you will be in Mexico, right? You and your family are embarking on a
semester abroad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about the motivation to do that.
Well, I started taking foreign language in public school in sixth grade. That was really rare 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And I studied.
Where did you grow up?
In Milwaukee. I did an exchange in high school in the summer, and my host sister, who's Bavarian, is married to an Italian, and she's still my sister. And then I studied abroad at the University of Salzburg in college.
Okay. You were studying at the University of Vermont. Studying math and German.
Mm-hmm.
And so, then semester in Salzburg?
Year.
Awesome.
My dad had done a semester in Vienna a really long time ago, and he said, if you don't go for the whole year, I won't help you go.
Interesting.
Yeah, he felt like you needed that long to get I already was basically fluent in German, but I needed that long to get the language, the culture. I was taking international business classes, which was totally not related to my major, but was awesome.
Uh-huh.
And he really wanted me to travel to places where I didn't speak the language and was uncomfortable and just fend for myself, which was great. I was 20.
Yeah, totally immersive.
Yeah, I traveled a lot, and my mom had never been to Europe, so she was a substitute art teacher, and she would send me U-Rail passes with postcards she would tell me, I'm vicariously living through your travels.
Okay.
And then she came to visit.
Oh, wonderful.
My parents came, yeah. So it was pretty amazing, actually. So all along, I knew if I had kids, I would want to travel. And I wanted to learn more languages. And I thought I would maybe work internationally or do something, and it didn't happen. And so then when I realized I had this opportunity with my kids and my job's fairly mobile, I spent the last 3 years implementing a bunch of tech tools to streamline that, and here we go.
Here we go. Press go.
Do it.
All you just need is connection.
Yeah.
Right?
And I got internet.
So where in Mexico?
Manzanillo is the city.
Yeah, where's that?
It's about 5 hours south of Puerto Vallarta.
Okay.
It is the largest Pacific shipping port, or last time I checked, in Mexico.
Interesting.
It's not a gigantic city, but it is a real working Mexican port city.
Uh-huh.
And my kids are going to a bilingual school.
And did you choose this? Yeah, why did you choose this particular place?
My uncle, my dad's brothers, had a place down there for 35 or 40 years.
Yeah.
And we have visited off and on. And 5 years ago, we went for a month.
Okay.
And we started meeting more people deeply.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, have you ever thought about bringing your kids to school? And most of them were older, my parents' age. But one guy said, my granddaughter, and his granddaughter was there at the time, and she and my daughter had befriended each other, and they still keep in touch. And he said her mom was going back to law school, so she just came down here and went to this school.
Sure.
So we visited the school 5 years ago. So that's actually when the dream started.
And how old are your kids now?
6 and a half, first grader, 13, seventh grader.
Yeah, and how do they feel about this?
They're both a little nervous. Uh-huh. The 13-year-old has more anxiety, social anxiety, all that sort of stuff about missing friends. But I think because they have both been to this area multiple times,
right.
They know the condo, they know where we go swimming in the sea, they know where we grocery shop, they have like a favorite hamburger or restaurant, you know. That's a little easier. And my husband's coming back and forth. His job isn't quite as flexible, although
okay.
They are being very generous with vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be down there for a couple weeks getting them into school and doing all of that. And we just found an open water swim team on Facebook.
Oh, super.
And they swim on the swim team here.
So they got stuff to do, and they're going to fall into their people.
Yeah,
and
bring in soccer cleats and
yeah.
The clarinet and
great.
Goggles.
Yeah, and you're good to go.
Figure it out.
Anyway, so let's transition a bit. You know, if people want a sort of a deep dive into the mechanics of Gatherboard, your business, you just did an appearance on the Can Do podcast, and it does a pretty deep interrogation of how that business works. I'd like to talk about just that space in general, you know, the advertising space. You worked in advertising with The Independent. What was the thought process of becoming an entrepreneur from that point?
Yeah. So I went from there to NewWest.net, which was an online news journal
okay.
based here in Missoula. It was started by a guy, Jonathan Weber, who was actually a visiting journalism professor,
mm-hmm.
the Pollard.
Polner.
Polner.
Yeah,
yeah.
Polner Scholar.
Polner Scholar. Yeah. So he loved Missoula. He really could have started this anywhere. It was lucky for us. And it was an early venture fund.
Mm-hmm.
And they covered, it was the first online-only news journal, maybe ever, but definitely in the West.
Yeah.
And it was a model for some bigger ones that are still successful.
What year was this about?
Oh, man. Okay. Elizabeth is 13, and she was 1 and a half, so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So fairly, not necessarily early, but in the middle of like this big transition of media from print to digital.
Yeah, like it was just going online. The Independent was just reiterating their second website
right.
version and had like a new online rate card, but it was very foreign.
Mm-hmm.
So actually what was happening was in that early place, the internet was really fractured.
Yeah.
There were too many calendars. There was very confusing about where to advertise. There were so many places to get info. I think people didn't understand at the time that you would end up specializing in something you were pretty good at and then collaborating with partners. People still felt like it was a finite resource and there was like a land grab and there was
okay.
a scarcity mentality. But really, I think a lot of abundance has come out of it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was interesting. And advertising was confusing, and in Montana it was interesting because people, I felt in more rural areas that I interacted with, not just in Montana but other places, were much more skeptical of being on the internet.
In general or advertising on the internet?
advertising. Yeah. Like who's reading it? Like, who are those people that click?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Right. Not realizing that, oh, wait a second. Now we can measure all that. We can tell you exactly who's clicking.
But then people didn't really know what the measurements meant.
Correct.
Right? And what the value was. And I didn't. I was constantly relearning.
That's emergent.
Constantly relearning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's been pretty interesting.
Okay. So you're with this new online journal.
So the real estate boom and bust happened in the West, and New West flames way up and does this awesome stuff and breaks stories, and then they flame way out because there's no one left to pay.
Yep.
Right? It's like just no
what
money.
What do we do?
What do we do? So Colin Hickey and I had started stuff.
Uh-huh.
He had a buyback clause. We took the MissoulaEvents.net and community sites that he had started and they incubated there, and we bought a couple. We bought them back. There were just a couple.
Yeah, and he was developing that sort of in the music venue space, right?
Exactly.
Sort of help people sort out who's playing where and when and overlap and stuff like that.
Yeah, so he was super early
in
that. Music space in Missoula, and his brother, who's a IT guy, said, oh, do more of a community thing. And then New West said, oh, we want these community hubs all across the West. Can we use your platform?
Okay.
Colin did a buyback clause. I ended up there. Then as New West sunsetted out, Colin exercised the buyback clause and said, hey, you know how to run all this like numbers advertising side. I do the logistics. Let's do it together.
Sure.
So it was a fun side job. And then within a couple of years, when everyone was figuring out how to monetize online, people realized that when you have all the eyeballs, then you can charge for them. And if you have the community calendar, if you're the community hub, if you're the heartbeat,
if you're the place people are going,
then you have the eyeballs.
Yeah.
And calendars are an eyeball machine.
Yeah, let's talk about that market, actually.
It's really nutty right now.
Yeah, wacky. And, you know, I guess the ultimate question is, like, why isn't all calendar traffic on Facebook? You know, there's monopoly power in tech right now. Why isn't it not, like, why don't you just post it to one place? What is the advantage of having a community-oriented calendar that's specific to a community?
My experience on Facebook and with other calendar solutions, because there's a lot, is first, not everyone's on Facebook. You have to choose to have a login.
Yep.
And then you have to... You probably won't be exposed to an event unless you like that business.
You won't get served with that in your news feed if you haven't indicated it might be interesting to you.
And your geolocation plays a big part right now of what you're fed. And if I suddenly travel to Manzanillo, it's going to take a little while for my algorithm to start showing me Mexico and Manzanillo opposed to Missoula.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to go seek it out, which is fine. But also... A lot. So there's people that aren't on there. It's harder for tourists. They have changed some of the way their calendar is, and you can choose to scroll through events by, you know, geolocation and other things like that. But really, Facebook is something that you choose to be on and you're invited to. Gatherboard is like a newspaper where everyone's invited.
Okay. Open.
It's open.
Yeah.
Open door. And really, I should just say that is the biggest value. When we have a mission, it's a tech for human connection. So I don't want someone to just read something I posted or see a picture or hear there's an event. People are looking at those events because they want to go to them. And it's about getting people in the same room together.
Yeah, I mean, a particular type of human connection. It's not necessarily connection on a platform. It's connection in person. Like you're getting people to go to an event, to interact one-on-one with groups, face-to-face.
Yeah.
That seems like a real core value to you.
Huge.
Yeah.
In general, not just a Gatherboard value.
Because not many people think of tech as facilitating that type of human connection.
No, they don't.
So this is a particular take. And how did you kind of arrive at the notion that you could use technology to facilitate that human connection?
It was already pretty obvious to me that Missoula Events was on to something when it was just Missoula.
Okay.
And Bozeman and Boise, like this little trifecta, and that people wanted it, and they were like talking about it, and I was like, that's like my thing.
Yeah,
and I hear people talking about it, and then I started meeting people as Missoula's tech scene was growing, and you know the residency program was coming in, or you know other parts of the university were ebbing and flowing, and people would come in and say, "Oh, your website like saved us. We found XYZ. My wife plugged in here. My husband plugged in there. He didn't have a job yet. We found this fencing club for my kid. I mean, I'd get like teary-eyed at like the High Tech Alliance because people would tell me this. But I was like, wow, I'm onto something. And then people from other parts of the country started finding our sites because we didn't realize they were little SEO machines. Mm. And they'd say, I wish I had your site where I lived. We don't have a nightlife calendar.
Explain that a little bit more. How are they SEO machines? So, search engine optimization.
Yeah, sorry about that. So search engine optimization, the algorithms are constantly changing, but the core behind it is, you know, you have lots of regularly updated content. Well, it's constantly updated. It's community generated, yep, like massively. You have lots of in and out links and fairly strong links. Well, by virtue of a strong community calendar, you'd be linking in and out with other strong partners in your community, like a university or a chamber of commerce or downtown association, something like that. And also, we had some really good advice early on for how we expressed the auto-generated URLs of each little event page, each little category page, each little thing like that, in addition to the auto-generated title tags. So we got some tips on playing the game early. And I mean, it is a real layering effect. No one turns on a website and it's got good ratings tomorrow. It's like a,
takes time.
It's like
to triangulate to it.
3 to 6 month layering. You got to just be patient. But it is a bit of a machine. And our calendars had already been up for years, just like churning along with this huge archive.
So you're sort of just product design is already kind of optimized for search.
Yeah, totally.
Structurally.
Yeah, and then we review that to make sure.
Yeah, and then you can kind of play within those guardrails, but you're already set up for success in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and each site that turns on is its own little small business or a companion to an existing company, and so it helps them be successful as well.
Yeah, I'm just like, as we're laying out this sort of ways of using technology to facilitate human interaction, it's so inspiring in a way, because you think of what a lot of tech models are now, and that's disintermediate humans to the extent possible, or in some ways disintermediate human connection. Like if you look at Uber, right? I don't know when the last time you took an Uber was.
Fairly recently, but I'm one of those people who like chats with the Uber driver.
But it's set up so that you don't really have to, right? You don't really have to pay all through the app. You can walk, you're almost being driven around. Well, I think that's Uber's plan, right, is that they're sort of betting that when driverless cars are ubiquitous, they've referred to their drivers as supply. I could go on this whole riff about how corrupt and unethical Uber's business model is, but we're not going to do that here. A New Angle is brought to you by First Security Bank and Blackfoot, two cool companies doing awesome things all over Montana.
Hi, I'm Nora Sachs. I'm the host and reporter of Richest Hill, a podcast from Montana Public Radio, and you're listening to A New Angle.
Anyway, so I'm inspired by this notion of using tech for human connection.
And to loop, so I like started seeing people just their eyes light up about how it helped them in Missoula. Anytime my family interacted with it, and I happened to have sites where some of my siblings live or my parents were here, I saw that it worked for teens, for seniors. It was easy to use.
Yeah.
So
that's big.
Then as my oldest started getting aware of technology, I realized what a lonely place it is and how much opportunity there is to misstep and to be ostracized or bullied or left out.
Yeah.
And I'd wanted to create something where people were invited and where they were included.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have this great sort of community-oriented mindset, a great product to facilitate that type of community. How do you monetize a product like that? I mean, it's a great service to the community, but it's got to pay the bills for you to keep doing it.
Yeah. So Gatherboard itself, if someone wants a license, is a tiered monthly licensing fee based on annual agreement.
Okay.
And the pricing is also very much in line with our values.
Mm-hmm.
It's smaller communities pay less, but it's not like you're small and you also get less features.
And when you say community, you're selling it into towns, municipalities, clubs? Like what's a typical client or what's the portfolio of clients?
Yeah, sure. So, for instance, in Sealy Lake today, there were 7 different entities in the room actually trying to figure out who will be the right person to be the umbrella of everyone.
Okay.
And so it often comes down to a community or economic development type organization. So chamber, CED.
Sure.
A media. So the newspaper, the radio station, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's for a physical community, like a Missoula. Right. So, sometimes it's a one-off. It's just someone who knows that this is a good thing in their town and they want to just put it together and they're already a community connector, like a random Molly in another place or something like that.
Yeah.
And then also universities are often interested in them and university newspapers. And sometimes the university newspaper, like the Kaiman, is awesome here and it's actually filling a void with the independent leaving. That's not uncommon. So often the university newspaper is like a great source of news and connection in the community, not just on campus.
Yeah.
And that's a really good customer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have other people doing specialized calendars, like just a nightlife calendar or just a calendar for their community of architects and designers in a certain area or deaf people in a certain area. We have one like that in Vancouver, Canada. So you were asking me what defines community and...
Well, we were talking about, I guess I was sort of getting into
the sales side. Oh, monetizing it.
Yeah, how do you monetize? So you sell these licenses to the platform?
Someone buys a license.
Yeah.
It's software as a service.
Okay.
And the platform goes pretty deep. It's a freestanding platform. It's like a mini WordPress.
Yep.
So it comes with multiple pages and layers and modules. It's not a JavaScript plugin for an existing site. It's its own site.
Okay.
And so someone buys it, and depending on the size of their community. And if it's a physical community, I use Census. If it's a virtual community, I'll use some analytics that they have.
Okay.
They fall into one of our pricing tiers.
Oh, got it. Based on the number of people that are presumably going to use it.
Yeah, and their ability to monetize.
Sure.
Right?
Okay, so yeah, that's the piece. So are the ads on these various calendars... Does that added revenue go to the community? Does that go to you? Is it split? How does that work?
So the community chooses how they want to monetize the site.
Okay.
There's all sorts of opportunities in there. Some people don't want to monetize at all.
Yeah.
They turn the ads off. It's not even something they're interested in.
Okay.
Or they put something totally different in the ad container, like self-promotion or
whatever. Whatever message they want
to get. Most people... do advertising. So they'll sell venue pages to bars or the library or the university or something, or they'll, sell direct advertising or mobile advertising, all sorts of different things like that. Right now, they choose how they're going to monetize it. That's their thing. One of the big things I'm drilling down on in my big money self-exploration is figuring out not just a payment window, but an internal ad network, because a lot of the advertising networks out there that you would plug into Gatherboard are very confusing. They're a stumbling block to launch.
Mm-hmm.
And because these highly curated calendars have their own community they're operating in, most of their advertisers are not super sophisticated global advertisers that don't want geofencing
like the
local and day parting.
Yeah,
they don't
stuff.
Don't want any of that.
Yep.
They just want a straight.
They
want
to sell hamburgers.
Yeah, they just want a straight campaign. Exactly. And so we're trying to figure out our own simple ad network with a payment window that would kick a small percentage to Gatherboard, but the majority of it to the license holder.
Okay.
But that small percentage is actually a lot.
Yeah.
It'll be a lot.
I would think. And then do some clients actually sort of view the Gatherboard subscription license as an operating expense for an ad business? Like, are they trying to develop an ad business and they're just using a Gatherboard as a substrate? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't know that I've run into anyone that's strictly that way, but there are definitely people who are already running, for instance, a business networking site, and they make a bunch of their money off of the, advertising and membership that comes in, and they realize that this is a great companion to accelerating that that end.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So this custom sort of ad platform that you're thinking of developing for your clients to utilize your platform better, is that kind of the next phase of potential growth for Gatherboard?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's that, and there's 2 or 3 other ad ideas in there, about aggregating event data, but it still needs to go through a filter that's curated by the license owner, because we've had a lot of people scrape Gatherboard sites, and then they never well, first of all, they're just stealing your information because you created it yourself, which is really annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if there isn't checking and rechecking, then often the data they scraped, if they think it's recurring, and what if that event stopped 5 years ago and they're still whatever.
It's
so it's useless. And then it makes a bad calendar. So we're trying to figure out some input automation of events, but it still would go through a kind of a curation window. And then also, even though I don't always love Facebook, we get asked a lot if after someone creates an event, whether it's the license holder or the community member, the end user, if they could push it to Facebook.
Okay.
So we're just figuring out even more streamlined relationships between ubiquitous apps, I guess I would say.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, playing well with others under certain terms.
In our values.
Yeah, exactly. That's the key, right? Who owns the data and what happens to it and what gets shared.
And people press me a lot, current customers, prospective customers, potential investors, just community members. They ask me a lot of questions. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? You know, and I'm always like writing stuff down and, okay, I think I hear what you're saying, but that doesn't feel like Gatherboard. But if I massaged it this way, now it does feel like Gatherboard, you know. So it's tricky because Colin and Lori, who works for us, that's our team right now, we're very dedicated to the value of human connection.
Yeah.
We get asked all the time, why don't you have commenting and rating and thumbing upping and thumbing down of events, for instance? That's the big one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, do you know if everyone decides that this event is super cool and popular and loves this thing and thumbs it up, and someone else puts their event on and it's fallen all the way to the bottom and no one ever sees it? What if we all missed out on this great opportunity just because we were in a popularity contest? And so much thumbing up is just because your friend thumbed up. It's not because you actually
contagion
know.
Contagion effects. And
all of that.
And then the thumbs down goes in that same direction, too. Like, it gives license for people to just troll anonymously. And
trolling and commenting requires a moderator.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It is a lot to curate a calendar without moderating it.
True.
So we were like, nope, that doesn't meet our values, and that isn't about human connection.
Yeah, and then I guess events, too, are perishable. In the sense that they have this big comment thread about an event that's happened 6 months ago. It's not useful.
No, and then how long are you going to moderate the comments? Do you turn them off? I can't be moderating something that someone archived from 5 years ago.
Right, good decision. I like it.
And nasty, naughty pictures people put.
You don't want that.
Ugh. So, yeah.
So a variety of ideas in the hopper for what's next. And I would imagine, like, based on which ideas you prioritize, that would dictate... You know, some of those you could self-fund, some you might have to go gain external funds for. I mean, I know the Gatherboard was bootstrapped with income from one of your other businesses we'll talk about perhaps. So how are you looking at growth and what's the right type of growth and who you want to bring into the family?
So it's time for growth.
Okay.
It's on. It's go time.
It's happening.
I mean, it is happening. I have had the craziest 6 weeks, and Canada must be in love with me right now because I think I get 5 inquiries a day from Canada. That's an exaggeration, but I did get 5 inquiries this week from Canada, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And one from Sweden, and it's like it's happening. People like it. It's working. So I got to accelerate some of these ideas.
Sure.
So some of this white space I hope that I'll have on this trip is to drill down on these numbers, write the story, figure out what it's really going to take. What's my 18 to 24 month runway? How can I get that done? And then that will dictate what's the number. Is it self-funded? Is it, you know, do I have a rich uncle? Is it friends, family, and fools? Is it angel? Is it VC?
Yeah.
So I've also, luckily in Montana, have lots of friends and out of Montana and my family in all those spaces. And in the last month have had dozens of conversations.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing my homework.
Do you have any sort of, you're very mission driven. How do you sort of approach, you know, giving up slices of the business, giving up equity potentially, and vetting partners in those choices?
I think I really believe in Colin and I. Mm-hmm. We're smart and we're a good judge of character. And I think that we'll write out all the stuff we need to. We'll send it out to our advisors. Some of those advisors might be potential funders. They will ask us a lot of hard questions. You know, we'll revise. And I really believe that when we're in that room pitching, whether it's to a bank or an angel or VC or, you know, your rich uncle, you'll know. It's what Paul Gladden said to me once when we were talking about funding. He said, you know, it's like you're interviewing someone that you're going to date or be your spouse. Yeah. Like, you'll know if you have a good vibe. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh, yeah, so much about Gatherboard is about human connection. So I'm just going to have that same attitude about funding. And if there's a good connection and we agree, then no problem.
That makes good sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to pivot the conversation slightly. Being that you are a woman about town involved in all these organizations, Powerhouse, Million Cups, you do a ton here at the College of Business and the university in general, Downtown Association, Hellgate Venture Network. What am I missing? What are the other ones?
I wouldn't say, it would be a mistake to say that I'm actively involved in all of those
organizations. Yeah, but you show up.
To some of them, I pick and choose. And some of them I've been very involved with in the beginning and maybe help get started, and then I, you know, step away or whatever.
Yeah, so as an engaged citizen of Missoula, seeing the growth that's happening in the downtown corridor in particular, some of the employers that are just hiring away and building. And yeah, downtown is changing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? How's it going?
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm into it.
Yeah.
I also, 10 or 12 years ago, participated in downtown master planning. Mm-hmm. And then this past year, when we did a whole year of charrettes, I showed up. So what I realized was, if I don't like the way something's going, or I do, and there's all these meetings, and I don't show up and get self-educated, get the right story, and then know the right way to vote, right, with my literal vote or my dollar or my influence, writing a letter to someone who is the actual voter
or
my
network, well.
Yeah, whether it's city council or the mayor or a board or whatever, if I don't show up, I can't complain. I really can't. I'm not even really allowed to have an opinion.
Totally.
So I show up.
Yeah.
When it's important to me.
Absolutely.
That's the bottom line.
And you've expressed your opinion. And you like what's happening.
I'm pretty into it.
Talk about that.
Well,
I mean, you've been in Missoula, what, 20 plus years now?
Yeah. 21. 21 and a half. Who's counting? 21 years. So there's a lot of stuff that's changing. And there are things that I don't love. Mm-hmm. I'm sad about people who don't have housing.
Yeah.
I'm sad about people who don't have access to food.
Yeah.
I get bummed out about how expensive childcare is. And I mean, it was like really hard for my husband and I.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think about those things, I try to think about them as I think about, hey, what's happening in our downtown corridor?
Yeah.
Right. Or I luckily have some really good friends that work, you know, whether it's in public health or at the food bank or whatever. And I get the right information, or I ask them how I can advocate for them.
Sure.
How can I use my privilege to advocate for mm-hmm. them, for the people with the least privilege? So I said to my daughter the other day, 13, I said, hey, we didn't choose our DNA, but we do have to choose what we do with it.
Right.
Really, that's the bottom line. And I was kind of raised the same way. So I'm really excited, for instance, when I hear that this former MCPS school is becoming a childcare center.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing. And that's not in the downtown corridor, but that's totally going to affect that.
Because, it's adjacent, yeah.
And also, everyone who works downtown doesn't live downtown.
Correct.
So it's totally helpful to that area of town. Well, I look at the library and that family that donated the library to the city. I can't wait to see what happens there. I personally think there's an opportunity for early childhood
education. So the old library site.
Yeah.
Yeah, once the new library is open.
Yeah, that would be an interesting conversation mm-hmm. To see what's happening there. So basically, I just think about who needs to come live, work, and play downtown for it to be vibrant, and how do we make it accessible and friendly? And I try, it's a similar lens to Gatherboard, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just try to think through that lens when I show up and ask questions and then advocate.
Are there any things in particular that you'd like to see happen?
I think we need to figure out how to make housing more affordable and accessible and mixed. Well, I think the Hip Strip has a huge opportunity, our area of downtown just south of the river, mm-hmm. because there are weird, interesting spaces that I think could be used better and just allow things to be more accessible. And I really love that the senior center is there. And so that's the other thing that I'll do is I'm not always afraid to be awkward or uncomfortable. I went with some friends that I play Scrabble with, and we played bingo at the senior center one night instead, because I thought, well, if it's important to me that the seniors are here, shouldn't I actually know what they got going on?
That makes sense.
So yeah. I got to show up.
Yeah. Was it awkward?
No, and it was really fun.
Yeah.
I'm totally going to go back.
Did you win any money?
No, but some people in my group did.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's nice.
No, it was awesome. It was really fun.
Awesome. So, Molly, I guess I got one more question for you. Should I buy a urinal ad or a stall ad?
Oh. Well, who is your current... What do your demographics show that your current listenership is?
Well, if you're asking, I don't have gender information.
What does your gut tell you, or your word of mouth? What does your community
tell
you?
Well, I mean,
you?
I guess I wonder which is more effective. The stall ad is far away. The urinal ad, it's like in your face. Like, it's hard for me to look at other things.
But a urinal ad is only in your face for a man. A stall ad is
correct.
In your face for a woman. Or if you're in a unisex bathroom,
yep.
then a stall ad is applicable to both genders. And so my question for you is, who are you trying to attract?
Everybody.
Then I would specifically choose locations that have unisex bathrooms, and I would ask for locations near the sink or in the stall.
I love it. How do I do that? I'm sort of indirectly referencing Molly's other business, Missoula Indoor Ads.
Which is totally the opposite of owning a tech business, and it's amazing.
And it's awesome. I mean, it's simple and it works.
Mm-hmm. And
right?
the more tech allows us all to be out of our office, literally the more effective the bathroom ads are. Because people are at the gym and at a cafe and at a brewery.
I mean, there's so much time. They're working at coffee shops.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing all this. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the questions you just asked me about my objectives with this potential ad made me think about, like, oh, yeah, you actually have much more kind of knowledge of the customer you're reaching through this medium than you might ordinarily think.
Oh, yeah. People like to... poo-poo it, no pun intended.
Nice, I like that.
That was really an accident, I promise.
Yeah, that's not happened before. First time
no,
you've workshopped that material.
No.
Nice,
totally
I like
first
it.
Time. But oh, you know what? I would love to do stand-up comedy once, and so I'm going to work that into
my
head.
I like it. So, you can workshop your material anytime here, Molly.
Totally. So people do downplay it, but the fact of the matter is, what's your demographic, what area of town, who are you trying to reach, are they male or female, does it matter, how old are they? I take it just as seriously as I do a gather board customer, just as seriously as I did as a large campaign at the Independent, for multiple reasons. Number one, because what is the point of me doing it if I'm not going to do a good job and take
correct.
It seriously?
Yeah.
Don't do anything you're not willing to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, because there are a lot of really good questions to ask, do you want power moms? Okay. Bitter Gymnastics, Mismo Gymnastics, Missoula Indoor Soccer Arena, Spectrum. Do you want college students? Like Badlander, Union Club, Allison Vick.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So it's legit.
It's totally legit.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to work. We're going to do this.
Okay, good. Let's do it.
All right. Molly, best of luck. And we're excited to catch up with you mid-semester. And thanks for coming in, sharing your story. Thanks for all the awesome stuff you do in this community, but also to support what we're trying to do for our students here. It's really inspiring.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to come in. And I will just say, Gatherboard would be nothing without your students.
Well, there
They're
you
amazing.
Go. Yeah. We're going to keep trying to make more of them.
Good.
Thanks, Molly.
Thank you.
Okay, so fun talking to Molly and learning more about Gatherboard. I hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't used MissoulaEvents.net yet, you should. Check it out. Thanks for listening to A New Angle. We really appreciate it. And we're coming to you from Studio 49, a gift from University of Montana alums Michelle and Lauren Hansen. And remember that A New Angle is supported by CED, Consolidated Electrical Distributors. These guys pretty much sell anything electrical you would ever need, but they also hire a ton of our students. If you want to learn more about jobs at CED, visit cedcareers.com. Before we go, I want to thank some important peeps, executive producer Stefan Borsum, and interns Aspen Runkle and Max Gibson. Huge thanks to VTO, Jeff Ament, and John Wicks for the tunes. And finally, props to Jeff Meese, our master of all things sound. Finally, if you have any questions, suggestions, comments, insults, whatever, please email me at anewangle@umontana.edu. Help us spread the word, and be sure to use the hashtag #anewangle when you do. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.